Warning, explicit content. Viewer discretion, listener discretion is advised.
You're going to listen anyway because you have no choice.
Well, they do. They can turn it off.
Yeah, but.
But anyway.
Yo, check it. Call Lil C's. Tell that motherfucker to bring me some motherfucking weed from the hospital. No, fuck that. Notorious. Tell that reporter to go pick up 10,000 from Dez and go take about like 20 G's from Gina. Notorious. Tell that motherfucker to get this nigga next door up out of here. That nigga be snoring all night. I can't sleep.
Welcome to Beside the Point Podcast. I'm Sean.
I'm Joe.
And I'm Tony.
And today is the anniversary of one of the premier rappers or hip hoppers. It's 20th anniversary of the Notorious B.I.G.'s death. I never thought time has a thing with me where I just don't register it.
Think about time, and people tell me I'm young and whatever, too. I have that conversation. Oh, you're 30, then you're young. I'm like, well, I see the passage of time at the same rate that you do, so I don't know what the big deal is. Because I was aware younger, and I've always hung out with older people. And I've experienced, I remember hearing about this in 1997. I was in high school, middle school, whatever at the time. But I remember hearing about it, and I was listening to hip-hop and, you know, among other things, alternative and, you know, other kinds of music. But hip-hop was definitely something I was listening to at the time. And then a few years later, Eminem came out. And I really got entrenched in hip-hop, but...
Well, and the fact that, you know, especially artists like Eminem, they were all influenced from the people before, Run-DMC, Biggie Smalls, you know, Curtis Blow, all that stuff. But the fact that, you know, and that you wouldn't think that it's escalated to that point back in 97. I think I was 22, 23, maybe.
Something like that.
And like I was telling Joe, I woke up to that kind of news. I'm like, oh, come on. That's not a good way to start your day.
Right.
You know, artists that you love, I mean, his funeral. They were talking about his funeral. It was like, it was a celebration like they would do in New Orleans. Mm-hmm. You know, once they got the music started, everybody was celebrating.
Yeah.
You know, that's the kind of thing that he would have wanted. You know, it was a tragedy because of what the situation was going on between the East Coast and West Coast. And people were getting sniped, killed over dumb stuff.
Because Tupac had been killed, 6 months earlier or something like that?
And he died 6 months, literally like six months later.
Almost to the day, yeah.
September 13th.
So it was like almost to the day, September 13th, 6 months later, March.
Planet.
Yep.
Right.
It's like this stuff is happening all over again.
Because really, was there an event before Biggie and Tupac? Was there something that happened since John Lennon? I'm trying to think.
Well,
people getting shot like that, or some, you know, somebody getting killed in cold blood like that.
Scott, there was a DJ called Scott LaRock. He was actually a founder of Boogie Down Productions with KRS-One. He was actually shot to death over, I think somebody tried to rob him.
Sure.
And he was shot. Like, they found him like a day later. You know, and things like that have happened between crews, you know. I mean, think about where hip-hop came from. And it's everybody's trying to get out. You know, and you lose people, you know, to do the hustling and everything like that.
Mm-hmm.
And as I was discussing with you earlier about Ice-T, that was the same thing that was going on the West Coast, you know, especially with the Crips and Bloods coming into more prominence even back then.
Right.
You know, I mean, it was, you know, he said that I got friends that are doing 25 to life that will basically never see the light of day until they get carried out of prison. In a box.
Yep.
And they will still won't see the light of day.
Right. That's what that means. They still won't. Anyway.
Moving on.
That whole concept of, and especially in hip-hop, so that's definitely always an underlying theme in hip-hop. I feel weird talking about this as a white dude. but I'm pretty black, as Sean has pointed out.
Yes, you
so,
are.
and I've listened to it, and I obviously I don't completely understand it or know the whole situation, but you know, I grew up in like a lower, you know, middle class. I didn't have a lot of luxuries of anything. So if somebody says white privilege, black, whatever, it's just like it doesn't really mean anything to me anyway. I just grew up with what I grew up with, and I wasn't middle or upper class like, you know, there's a lot of people out there that had a lot more than I did. So
yeah,
but I can empathize with like that side of things. And
yeah, but a lot of that was built out of trying to avoid going to jail or dying, because
right.
Because there was really no alternative. You know, the school system sucked.
Yep.
A lot of people weren't being educated. So it's either music, sports, entertainment. Those are the big three, you know, kind of where
yep.
you can make your escape. And even like comedy or even if you are smart, you got to consider where people look at where you come from and what your education is.
Right.
Oh, you just got by because of this. The shade of your skin or whatever. And there's some smart motherfuckers out there.
Yeah.
It's just the fact that they weren't given the tools to be able to advance.
You think about, like, somebody's talent or somebody's natural, I guess talent would be the word for it, but, like, their natural, your natural ability to be, like, if somebody's born with a high IQ or something like that, and then you add in all the other factors, well, their parents are like, oh, my kid's smart, let's take him to this class and like find out if he's really smart, you know, and then they do a test or whatever. Black people in the hood are not doing that with their children. They can't necessarily do that. So the right there, you talk about a privilege or something where somebody's
know.
You know, those are like little things that happen, and there's all these little building blocks to get to where you're going, and there's very few people that have risen to prominence or gotten to be doctors or lawyers or rappers or basketball players or whatever. Yeah. The number is actually really small. You see them all on TV, but you know, that's still like 1% of any, you know, like anybody who played high school football, like 1% of them go to a college football program, and then like 1% of those go to, you know, be a pro football player or whatever.
Yeah,
just as one example. So it's like, yeah.
Because nothing's guaranteed.
Yeah.
You know, and a lot of people don't understand that. And
that's probably the best way to put it, too.
Yeah.
Like nothing. There's people who have stuff that's kind of guaranteed to them. Their parents have some money, or they're disciplining them in a certain way so that they're supposed to do good in school. Okay, you're going to go to college. You're going to become a lawyer. You know, they're indoctrinated with, I'll be a doctor or I'll be a lawyer because my dad was a doctor or lawyer or whatever.
Almost like a tradition.
Yeah. Like the family, you know, always had lawyers and whatever. So,
yeah.
But in the hood, the family has always had drug dealers or pimps or whatever, or just robbing stores or no dad at all or whatever's going on.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just like you have no role model, you have no formula or structure to move forward or a foundation to build stuff on.
Yeah. And as one whose parents came from that same area, I consider myself lucky because I actually asked my mother one day, like, if you had to marry dad, where do you think me or the other ones would be? And you probably would be dead. That's just a matter of fact.
Right.
Like, you or your brother would probably been dead.
Because where did you guys grow up, or where was your mom from?
The west side of Chicago.
West side, okay.
Like, right off of Roosevelt Road.
If people who don't know the Chicago geography, the west side's been always been bad, I think.
Not always. It's a tough area.
There was a lot of immigration stuff, so you have Greek
Pilsen.
Town, and then you go southwest side, there's Pilsen. Like a lot, like the church that was in the Blues Brothers was kind of essentially in that Bronzeville.
Yeah.
That was like south side, but the west side had a lot of just immigrant population that kind of shifted over there. And
yeah.
then.
Because my parents literally grew up and saw the transformation of that area. I mean, I even went back there with her probably sometime last year. And the things that they've done with all the row houses, then, like, my mother's
yeah.
like, I don't even see my house anymore. I don't see the house that I grew up in, you know, because they're trying to make it better because the onset of UIC yep. trying to build around that area. Because that was originally called the Little Village or Gene yeah. Adams Project.
Right.
And they had three big buildings. 2015, either 12 or 15 story buildings.
Yep.
Hardball with Keanu Reeves.
That's right. Okay.
It was filmed right over there. Dangerous area. Like, you literally had to have security walk these guys in and out.
Right.
Because it was controlled by certain gangs over there. Just like Cabrini Green, you know, and Robert Taylor homes.
Right.
That kind of stuff, you know, you have to be wary of that. And, you know, and my parents would tell us stories about things like that. Like, literally, my whole family grew up in that block of area.
Yep.
Till everybody started getting married and moving out. You know, I think my dad was like the last one to like move out this way, and okay. that was in 80. So we've been out here for 37 years.
Sure.
Because I was about seven or eight when we moved out of that out to Bartlett.
Sure.
So yeah, it's 37 years. That's why I say the passage of time, you don't even notice, and it's gone like that.
But right there, you look at your dad or your mom, like, working. Okay, you were born, and then 8 years later, you guys are moving out to the suburbs. So at some point in that eight-year span, they're like, all right, we need to, like, save up some money and get out of this neighborhood. Whatever, you know, they have a formula or, again, it's like a plan or a foundation to move forward and move up. But you have to build that yourself. When you're in that kind of situation, there's nothing there for you. There's no, you're in public housing or something. It's just like, or, yeah.
So, I mean, and that's, you know, and the funny thing is, I didn't fall in love with hip hop till like 84 when Run-DMC came out. It was basically like metal and pop. I blame WLS for that.
You were listening to...
But then again, I was listening to house music on WBMX. Damn it. I knew I should have posted that picture today.
What picture?
The one with me and Isaac Hayes.
Oh, yeah.
I got to get a better shot of that, though.
It's kind of blurry. Yeah, it was crooked.
You know, but but yeah. So.
We'll get a better shot. Yeah, there's a picture of, what was that, like a family or like a
barbecue? It was a barbecue.
Community barbecue, but.
For the radio station,
yeah,
and a lot, it was canceled, but Isaac Hayes showed up because I think he lived in Chicago for a little bit,
or he probably flew there, or he got there because he was supposed to appear, and then it got canceled, so he just stayed and hung around.
Yeah,
maybe.
So there's
everybody.
A picture of Isaac Hayes holding me as a little kid, toddler, with my aunt.
Yeah, were you 3 or 4 years old?
I think
something
I was like
that.
3. That's still the coolest picture.
Isaac Hayes has got you around the waist. He's like lifting you up, like like Simba or something.
Yeah. But yeah, when you listen to, you gotta understand, this is the 90s, you know. It was basically, because a lot of dudes didn't know whether or not they were gonna make it. Prime example of that, there's another guy, it was called Big L, Lifestyles That Are Poor and Dangerous. And I mean, the man was like a lyrical animal, you know. He could come up with stuff straight off the top of his head. Right after Lifestyles of the Poor and Dangerous came out, he was killed. I mean, he was over a dice game.
I mean,
he lived a hustler's life, and he kind of knew what was going to happen eventually, but he was going to try and make it, do it the best that he could. And he left a legacy, basically, with all the recorded freestyles. I mean, he influenced Jay-Z, he influenced Biggie, he influenced Nas. You know, that type of stuff. You know, I mean, even like with the rockers, you know, when they pass on, you know, Prince, David Bowie, you know, Leon Russell, you know, people like that, it's the same way. When you can leave a legacy and influence other people.
What's a good song on that album we should play?
I'm trying to think. Lifestyles of the Poor Dangerous.
Just like put the title track. But yeah, you think about white music or, you know, secular and things like that. Rock and roll. Let's dance and let's sing and let's go to the sock hop and make out and eat a fucking cheeseburger. Like, white people are making this music. But about what their life is about. I don't know, that just came out of me. But you talk about people who are from the inner city. They're going to talk about what their life, you know, you go all the way back to to Robert Johnson and the blues we were talking about on another episode where and that'll come. Actually, we recorded that the other day, but that'll come out after this. So we'll talk about Robert Johnson and the blues and stuff on another mini episode. But when you look at them talking about where they came from and what they do, you know, they're talking about selling rocks. They're talking about having to have a gun and having hose and all this other, you know, all these other things that sound funny or kind of quirky. Or and then the Tipper Gore wants to, like, well, this children shouldn't be hearing this music, and it's
they
like
gotta hear it, though.
You know, they're talking about real shit as opposed to let's go to the hop or like. I'm trying to think. They're like all the little lovey-dovey songs that all these white people make that I love too. But
it's still not
that was good though. Because I'm in
tears right now because just the fact that he just got to just pummel somebody in the head with like you know, go to the hop, eat a fucking cheeseburger. Or something.
Cheeseburger. But what was I even doing? So this is Big L.
Yeah.
Just for some background.
You know, but it's one of those things where, I mean, if you just listen to the cadence, you can tell that other people were influenced by him too, especially Nas. Nas had his own kind of beat, you know, kind of way of doing stuff. I mean, that goes back to Rakim as well.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, a lot of these guys, I mean, a lot of these people grew up listening to the old blues records, the old jazz records, and they listened and they had the timing. And,
yeah.
You know,
this
that
is
type of thing.
This is definitely jazz. Like, you think about how hip hop is formulated, and they got da 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 da, where they're rapping over a, you know, a beat. It's like just a straight up boom, and they're finding all those little notes and, you know, beats in there. That's definitely an element of jazz, where you think you listen to Run DMC and they're like
unbelievable,
and they're just like kind of on the beat, and they slow it down or speed it up. And then you have guys like this who created this whole other jazzy, like up and down and speed up and slow down, and
yeah, because this is more hustler music, you know,
right.
You're doing. You're doing bad things, but the music is what drives it. Then you listen, and then it all falls into place.
Right.
And there's another guy, Kool G Rap. He was definitely a storyteller. You know, hustlers. You know, on the run. That's one of my favorite songs from him. And there's a remix of it that's really badass. But this man, he died too short because I think he was
94, 95, somewhere in there, right?
Yeah.
So it was actually right if only a few years before the Biggie and Tupac thing happened. It was only like 2 years before that. So you had the late 80s with NWA that fed in from your, you know, your Run DMCs and things like that, and your Digital Underground came out. All these other groups trying to make dance music or whatever. And then you had these guys who were still doing the same thing like NWA was doing, talking about this is where we came from, this is our daily life, this is what we're doing, you know, all that sort of stuff. And kind of mixing it all together. And then they formulated music out of, you know,
nothing.
Mixing all these styles together and influences together. Mm-hmm. Like I said, almost turning it into jazz.
Yeah.
With know. Just, and there's some pretty talented Twista is like really fast.
Mm-hmm.
And,
it was funny. You should bring
Busta
up Twista.
Rhymes, yeah.
I was watching. He did, You Should Be Dancing by Sting.
Really?
They did three versions of that song.
Oh, wow.
One with Twista, one with Will.i.am, and a French version. Like, it was sang all in French. Now, no, this is like 2 o'clock in the morning and I'm watching this. But I was intrigued, you know. I was seeing, like, oh, let's see what they did. I'm like, the one with Twista was probably the best one. You know, seeing Sting's white ass just, you know, having all these women grope on him and everything.
Yeah.
So it's crazy. And he's like the henchman. Hey, let's go.
Yeah.
It's great. Ah, yes.
And this is a remake of that song we just heard by a group called Living Color, who also did a song, The Cult of Personality, if you're familiar with that song.
That one I'm familiar with.
So they're basically covering
Biggie Smalls.
Notorious B.I.G., Biggie Smalls' song.
As kind of an answer with all the gun violence everywhere, not just in Chicago, even though we seem to be the center of the universe as far as that goes.
And they actually put this out in September on the anniversary, 20th anniversary of Tupac getting killed. Because this was a Notorious B.I.G. song. Let's just call him Biggie.
Biggie.
From here on out, we're just going to call him Biggie.
Yep.
Biggie, for those who don't know, Biggie, we're not talking about a size of French fries at Wendy's, okay? Biggie.
Or a super gulp.
Or a super gulp. What are you, now what are you? We're going like a multi-world different restaurants now. No.
Oh, dude.
So, this song, he recorded this song like a month or a week before Tupac got shot.
Yeah.
So they thought, because this came out after he got killed, mm-hmm. after Biggie got shot. This was on like the next album that he put out like a week, couple weeks later, that was already set to be released in a couple weeks. That's why he was out in L.A. at that party, because it was like the Vibe Magazine Awards the Source Awards, and the Vibe Magazine party. That's what I was trying to say. So he was at this party, and then leaving the party, he got shot. So, and it's never been solved. Random dude. But anyway, 6 months earlier, Tupac got killed. And so they're like, oh, did he write that song about Tupac? Like, there's all the conspiracy theory stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Like, because there was a feud from East Coast, West Coast. Biggie's from Brooklyn. Tupac is from L.A.
Actually, he was born in New York as
Even though Tupac was born in New York. They were born, like, in the same hospital or some stupid. Like, yeah. They were born down the street from each other.
Relatively close, man.
Yeah, and yet just Tupac just ended up on the West Coast. But they were, like, friends with each other. All the like, beef and feud and the everything was kind of formulated by... Too. Formulated by just the whole culture and the media and stuff, kind of escalating things.
You can
go on Google and search for pictures of Biggie and Tupac
together,
and they're just hanging out at parties together. So Living Color put this out.
When I first heard it, I'm just like, oh shit. I mean, I got to meet these guys at the Double Door.
Really?
Yeah. And I think Vernon Reed, I'm like, thank you for being.
Yeah.
As you influenced a lot of these guys that was sweating their asses off in the Double Door. Rest in peace to the Double Door, too.
Yeah, right?
Fuckers.
I don't know. I'm not familiar with this one. Regret.
Oh, this is an original. Nice.
So this is an original by Living Color?
Yeah.
Okay. But yeah, they're like a rock band. Black guys, rock band. You know, it's just like, but they still obviously influenced and had a connect. They came around about the same time. That Cult of Personality song was what, 90?
That was in 90.
90, yeah. So that music came out about the same time as Biggie was coming up and Tupac were coming up. So they're kind of like, you know, they go hand in hand with each other at that time period. For,
I mean, this is a good song, though. Definitely, yeah. This sounds like it's going back to their roots. Like, I mean, considering that, you know, Mick Jagger discovered them.
Right.
You know, and he wanted to produce them. They're like, hey.
Yeah.
They don't know about all that. But, I mean, they took advantage of it because he produced their live album live at CBGB's.
Okay.
So, and it caught the rawness of what they were doing. And Vernon Reid was the one that created the Black Rock Coalition, where a lot of guys that were doing rock, you know, a lot of people of color, black guys, Asian, whatever. I mean, as long as they were definitely trying to be a part of that, you know, have that kind of thing going. Because you see, the only person that you really saw doing black rock music was Jimi Hendrix.
Right.
Carlos Santana and the guy that was playing percussion for the Doobie Brothers.
You can see the progression, like 20, 30 years before that, where black people were trying to just get on the radio,
yeah,
or get, you know, in popular culture. There was a separation with the white and black and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, fast forward to 1990, we're still having rock music now. They're trying to unsegregate or whatever, divide, you know.
Yeah.
Combine everything with rock music, and it doesn't matter who's, you know, a lot of these guys are background players,
you know.
You said, like in the Doobie Brothers, the percussion guy is black or whatever, but then now you got a band with four dudes,
they're screaming,
who are just all playing the shit out of their instruments.
Yeah. And then there's a band called Death.
That's, yeah, a whole other, yeah, yeah, you need to watch
A band called Death.
Punk rock, this like punk.
Total punk.
Turning knobs and shit. They were like a punk rock band from Detroit, three black guys. And they made an album and they didn't really go anywhere. And I mean, you're talking about, again, Detroit, like where you're at and like that hurdle you got to jump over. Mm-hmm. Like, everybody's got those. I like to think of it that way. Everybody's got hurdles to jump over, but they're just taller or shorter, yeah, for some people. So.
Well, and the thing is, too, you know, being in Motown. Yeah.
So you have a shorter hurdle because you're in, yeah, Berry Gordy's down the street.
And nobody was trying to hear that. Like, seriously.
Yeah.
I mean. And that's the type of thing that me and my cousin dealt with, too, because we were probably one of the few black kids in the area that was listening to rock and roll. He's the one, yeah, that influenced me and getting me into Metallica and Iron Maiden and Jimi Hendrix.
Again, rewind that concept to the mid-70s when punk rock itself was just a new thing. Mm-hmm. So now we're talking about a whole other thing and we're getting off track.
Yeah, sorry about that.
But, I mean, this is Living Color doing... Jackson 5?
Just Jacksons, yeah.
The Jacksons?
Yeah. They graduated from the 5. They had one more.
Well, they got rid of one and got another, and, like, didn't
Jermaine
stepped out, and then, like, Jackie stepped in or whatever.
And then Randy.
Randy, that's it. Because it was always, can you name the Jackson 5?
Michael Tito. That's all I can remember.
Really?
Like, hey, I got 2/3.
You got 2/5.
Two fifths. Right now, I'm about ready for 2/5.
So the Jackson 5 was
Michael Tito,
Jermaine, Jackie. Who am I missing?
Marlon.
Okay.
And then Jermaine was married to Berry Gordy's daughter.
Yep.
So he couldn't step away. When they stepped away from Motown, he couldn't leave.
No.
So then they brought in Jackie to replace Jermaine, so there's still five of them, and they couldn't call themselves the Jackson Five anymore.
They had to call
themselves Barry Gordy Jacksons. Wanted to not let that escape, so they just called themselves the Jacksons.
And when did Janet come into it?
Janet was just
she was in diapers still. She was in there a little bit, wasn't she?
No.
As far as the
No.
There was demos of, like, Don't Stop Till You Get Enough, where Janet, it's like Janet and Tito and Michael banging on pots and pans on the kitchen floor, and they've recorded a demo.
Yeah.
Maybe that's what I'm remembering.
Let's see if I can find that on Spotify. But, but anyway, this is a Jackson 5 tune. This Place Hotel. What do we want to go out on? What's a good Biggie song we want to go out on that?
The What?
The What?
The What?
I added that on that list as well.
Is it on the list? Okay.
Yes.
But yeah, Biggie Smalls, rest in peace, man. Like we said, it's hard to imagine 20 years. Time keeps moving on, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
That it does.
Where is it? The What? Method Man?
Yeah. Method Man and...
Little,
I used to get feels on the bitch. Now I throw shields on the dick to stop me from that HIV shit. And niggas know they soft like a Twinkie villain, playing the villain, preparing for this rap killing.
He was talking about, like, real issues, too. Mm-hmm. Like, preventing the spread of HIV. So did you learn anything today about Biggie Smalls, Tony?
A little bit.
Is that interesting?
It was interesting, yeah.
Yeah.
Like I said, it was something I only heard on the news a little bit. I wasn't into really rap that much back then. And still, I'm still not into rap that much. Eminem I heard a lot of, and I like some of his stuff. But
yeah.
But yes, it was very interesting.
He said that didn't happen very... I mean, people get shot all the time, obviously, but for somebody that famous who was on his way up... to get taken out, both of them,
yeah.
Tupac, and then 6 months later, Biggie Smalls gets shot. So it's like, I don't know, it's kind of not a lot of words.
Yeah, but it was kind of exacerbated by, you know, beefs, rumors, all that stuff, you know.
Right.
And unfortunately, with that kind of thing being in the community, you know, jealousy is, well, that's everywhere, but especially
yeah.
jealousy.
That clip at the end of that, what was it, Born Again or whatever, where his mom's talking about, if she was going to change anything, it would be to, like, not let him go into music because...
He would still be alive.
He would still be alive today if he hadn't gone into music and gotten in the middle of all that. Well, a couple years ago, or last year, whatever, 2 years ago, that rapper went back to Brooklyn. It was like Bed-Stuy or whatever neighborhood he came from. And he went back to just hang out with some friends at a house party or something, and he got shot. Because somebody in the neighborhood that knew who he was, and you made it out, and, like, fuck you, basically.
Yeah.
So.
And that's unfortunate, but that's the unfortunate part of doing that, you know? for it. I make it hot. Niggas won't even stand next to you.
Is this something he did when he was...
This is before he passed away.
Right. So this is when he was just hanging out with Wu-Tang versus Shaolin.
Yeah.
I never really heard this one.
Yeah, it's definitely one of those... Those hidden gems that you giggle at it. You're like, what the hell?
He did so much music that wasn't ever released either. They did this duets album where Korn and R. Kelly and who else was on that? It's right here. Every Diddy, Eminem, Twista, Bone Thugs and Harmony, Big Pun, Fat Joe, Snoop Dogg, The Game, Faith Evans, Diddy, Nelly, Jagged Edge, Tupac. They kind of merged all this stuff together. Scarface, Akon, Missy Elliott.
There's one more track that you gotta play. You gotta play Flavor in Your Ear, the remix.
Okay.
Cause that was probably the bet. His first verse was just like, oh damn. Yeah, turn that up a little bit. Come out and
play. Niggas is mad, I get more butt than ashtrays. Fuck a fair one, I get mine the fast way. Ski mask, right, nigga?
Yes.
Far from handsome, but damn a nigga tote much. More guns than roses, foes is shaking in their boots. A visible bully, like the gooch disappear, vamoose, you whack to me. Take them rhymes back to the factory. I see the gimmicks, the whack lyrics, the shit is depressing, pathetic. Please forget it. You're mad cause my style you're admiring. Don't be mad, UPS is hiring. You shouldn't have been the cop, fuck hip hop. With that freestyle, you're bound to get shot. Not from Houston.
Yeah, I mean, it's just flawless. It just comes out.
And you think about, did he write this down or was he just kind of freestyling? There had to be some kind of formula or he was.
Legend says that he basically freestyled that shit.
Yeah.
You know, just like Jay-Z. He had that
natural ability to
just let it
roll. I mean, Eminem's like that too.
Yeah.
Where he just lets it roll off.
Oh, to the new flavor. Yeah. I mean, just that verse alone. And then, you know, like, LL's on here too. And, you know, LL was already in the game from 83.
Yeah, he was one of Biggie's influences.
Yeah.
LL Cool J, Marley Marl,
Craig Mack, he kind of fell off. I mean, but the thing is, he wound up, he kind of got out of that life because he was a hustler too, you know. And
that's a common thread in a lot of these store people who were in lower income areas and urban settings and, you know, dealing drugs or whatever, getting involved with the gang stuff and trying to get away from that type of behavior and that element.
I'm kicking new flavor in your ear. I mean, I've always loved this song, but I had a fascination with the remixes. Oh, this is Rampage. Rampage the Boy Scout, part of the Flip Squad mode. The Flip Mode Squad.
Totally going over Tony's head, I bet.
Yeah.
I'm starting to go over my head, too.
I'm already drowning under that.
I'll have to break it down to different clicks.
Maybe do another one of these mini episodes and we dissect some lesser known, deeper cuts.
Yes.
Coffee.
Hot chocolate.
LL has not slacked.
No.
Even though he shouldn't have did that song with Brad Paisley. But that's a whole nother story.
I mean, to me, hip hop, that the style and like the skill of doing all that acrobatics with words is what drives, you know, is like attracts me to it.
Might have been entertainment, but there's kind of some realism in that too.
Again, like the foreshadowing element of it, you look at it in hindsight of him talking about being suicidal. The album's called Ready to Die. Right there, that's, you know, obviously a, has its meaning. And then, because what was the album they put out when after he passed away? It was just called Life After Death. Life After Death, yeah. So it was like already kind of going to be titled that. Because the first album was called Ready to Die. That was his first album that he put out in like 93, I think.
Yeah.
So he put one album out. He had finished the second album, but then that's, so this was the first album. The second album was about to come out when he got killed. Like I said, that was, they were at that party.
And then Born Again was like whatever remained, you know, they cleaned it up.
All the like recordings and demos and unreleased stuff. Mm-hmm. Yeah. They put out an album called Born Again, but Life After Death sold like 20 million bazillion copies or some shit.
Still selling.
Still. But that's the Notorious B.I.G. in a nutshell, as best we could sum it up. So we will talk to you next time. Thanks for joining us on this little mini episode. We're going to do some more of these little mini episodes. We got some ideas for things to talk about. So we figured we'd try to do it as a mini episode, just 30-40 minutes, and fit all the information in, and just kind of all about one topic. So if you like what you're hearing, send us an email, btppod@gmail.com. Call the hotline if you want.
Hotline!
Got a memory about Biggie Smalls or anybody else that you want to share with us? 608-728-7763. Call now. Operators are standing by. Actually, it's just a recording. It's a answering machine.
Housekeeping.
That's our answering service. But leave a message, and we'll play it on the air if you want. And there it is. Thanks for listening.